Rabbi, we are currently holding today's daf on the 27th day of the Omer, is daf Choftet, and we were holding in the middle of an explanation of the sugya of the machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva about ptilat habeged shekipla. Our first attempt, I mean, which it's not even right to say it's our first attempt, it's one approach, which is Rabbi Bar Abba's approach, and Rabbi Elazar Amar Barsha's approach, is that the Mishnah is best explained by seeing it as one issue, and that there's an interrelationship between a Ptilat HaBeget Shekipla, in terms of the Dinim of Tuma, and in terms of the Dinim of Hadlak. The only way we could create that relationship was by setting it up with very strict parameters. It had to be talking about precisely a 3x3 etzpo. It had to be talking about a case where Erev Shabbat was on a Yom Tov. And we had to assume that both Shitot and the Mishnah agree that Shivrei Kelim are prohibited for Hadlaka. And furthermore, they had to agree that it's not sufficient to get something that, to begin to burn, but you have to actually burn it after it's already singed around the edges, and Rov Hayotzei, you have to make sure it's lit. And given that that was the case, so then the question over here would be the Shaila of Tuma would now define whether it's a Shivrei Kelim. Because if you hold that it's in fact a Kli, and you hold that the Kipla doesn't take off, it doesn't take off the din of the Kli, so then that means it became Shivrei Kelim on Yantar. So the very Mandiyama who holds that it's Tumea, it's Vekabel Tumea, agrees that you're making it into Shivrei Kelim by the same definition by laying it on Yantar. And therefore Rebbe Eliezer holds both Tumeahi, it's a Beged, and therefore Ein Madlikim Ba, because by lighting it you'll make it a Shivrei Beged. Rebbe Akiva, on the other hand, holds that since you are already mekapelet on Erev Shabbat, it's tahar. That means it's not a beged. If it's not a beged already, it can't be a shivrei beged on Yom Tov. It's already basically shivrei kelim, and the two things are interrelated. That was one approach. It's inelegant in terms of its complexity, but elegant in terms of what it does for our Mishnah. Rava takes a simpler explanation, even though it's not elegant at all in the Mishnah, and says that it's actually an unrelated machlokas. It happens to be that the question over here revolves around whether something that's not muhuvav, it's not yet singed, whether you're allowed to light with it on Erev Yantav or not, whether we would say that it doesn't burn properly. That's the main problem. It's a ptila shalo huvava, it's a ptila that's not muhurechet, and therefore it isn't going to burn. And there's two separate machlokas in here, which is just another example of the supposed interrelationship between two things, Hadlakas HaNer and the Tumah V'Tayra, which has been with us throughout the parashah. Today, because we've brought up the issue of Mesikin B'Kelim, so we're going to go into the details, essentially, of the machlokas Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon, about whether you're allowed to use the Shivrei Kelim for Hadlaka. And we'll see that there's various levels of Shivrei Kelim. On Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, there is this, of course, is a Tana, Rav Yehuda, who's quoting Rav, who gives us over the nature of the machlokas between Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon in this halacha about Shivrei Kelim, which, of course, is an outgrowth of their overall halacha about Mukta and Nolat. So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Mesikin b'kelim ve'in mesikin b'shivrei kelim, Divrei Rav Yehuda v'Rabbi Shimon Matir. The first level of this machlokas is the one that we've already discussed. Actual shivrei kelim, according to Rav Yehuda, shivrei kelim are mukta, because Rav Yehuda Shita all over is to hold that nolad, something which wasn't there before and appears only now, even if it was physically present before, it has a different form. And halacha now is considered to be nolat. And therefore this case of Shivrei Kelim, before it was usable as X, and now it isn't, is essentially a new item. It's nolat, and therefore mukta cannot be used. Rabbi Shimon Matir, again, an outgrowth of the overall machlokas review to Rabbi Shimon about whether there exists nolat and mukta on Shabbos Yom Tov or not, Actually, we'll see, of course, Rabbi Shimon agrees it exists. He just defines it much more strictly. Mesikin b'timarim. Furthermore, you're allowed to use dates for burning, but achlan, once you eat the meat of the date, in mesikin begar inehen, you cannot use the pit of the date, because now that's the equivalent, according to Rabbi Yehuda, of shivrei kelim, because the garin was previously part of an edible fruit, and now it becomes firewood, so to speak, and therefore it's nolat, you can't use it. Rabbi Shimon matir. Seems to be exactly the same thing. The Gemara is going to discuss why it was necessary for Rav to tell us, actually we'll see on yet another one, three separate machlokas. Another example of the same issue is mesikin be'egozim. You're allowed to use nuts in order to burn on Yontem, but once you eat the nut, en mesikin beklipotehen, you cannot use the shell of the nut to burn, because previously the shell was bottled to the food and is part of a foodstuff, and now it's the equivalent of shivrei kelim, it's nolat. Rabbi Shimon matir. V'tzricha, we need all three of these levels. Because if you would have told me only the first one, which talked about actual instruments, kelim, that were broken, I would have said, well, of course, by hikom Rabbi Yehuda, mishum de mikor, klivatsheverkli, v'havelei nolat, v'yasur. The reason that Rabbi Yehuda perhaps said in that case that you weren't allowed to use it for burning on Shabbat and Yom Tov is because it's a completely new format now. It's Shivrei Kelim, and that's what Nolad is, but Tamarim, nothing changed. The Garin was always in the Tamar. It's just that, okay, before I relate it to the Garin as a carrier of the fruit, but I haven't changed anything. If I take something and I break it into two, I've changed it. The Garin isn't even touched. So I would have thought that Tamarim were Meikara Garinim Vashta Garinim. There's no difference that can be detected in the Garin per se. So Ema Shapra Dame, I thought perhaps, if hadn't been the Rav brought the Machloket here as well, that in that case, Rabbi Yehuda would be moda, that that's not considered to be a real change, and you would be able to use it for hadlaka. And then if you told me even that case, Iyashminin Garinin, I would have said, okay, you know what? Garinin, I understand, because the truth of it is that you don't relate to the Garin at all. You don't see the Garin. You're holding a whole date. You think of the date as food. Now when you remove the meat after eating, you have something here that you didn't relate to at all. I understand why he would look at that as being nolad or mukta, it was out of my... But a nut? I mean, the shell of the nut was there right in front of my eyes the whole time. Certainly in that case. Klipeya gozim. Demi'ikara migala v'ashtamik. I mean, there's no real difference in them at all. And then certainly Ema Shapadami Rabbi Yehuda would in that case certainly agree. Therefore comes along Rav to tell me Tzricha, all of the above cases, revealed as machmirin, because of the new form that it's taking in your mind. Because in your mind, as in other words, nolad, the idea of nolad, but Rav is expanding on the idea of nolad, is not that it wasn't extant, literally, but rather its form was to you so different that for all intents and purposes, it's something new.
That you can't use that one, but...
Well, that's like mukta. Mukta is something that isn't prepared for use. And, I mean, it does say in the Torah, Ve'echinu asher yavil, something about having things prepared. I mean, it's not literally the thing, but... Exactly, shimush shel ha'kli. Whereas the same as a kli is for the shimush of the kli, and not for hasaka.
What if the hasaka is only
in the evidence, you're
really just getting rid of it.
It's
this trash can you were trying to burn, get rid of it.
Wasn't
for
Hasakan just... Then if you're not being mishamish with it, then Enochinami. It's only tashmish of mukta that's prohibited. Not throwing out mukta that's prohibited. The truth is, it's strange, Bichlal, what exactly is our problem over here? It's not that I'm moving it or anything, is it? What's the tashmish of mukta over here? It's a big machlokas in the Akh. What does some want to conclude from here, including even the Magen Avraham toys with the idea that the mashmaut is that mukta is aser b'hana'ah? Because what else am I doing here that's wrong?
You have to move it around.
Well, later on in this sugya, we're going to see that there's an issue of moving it. and some say that that's the idea over here, that it's always moved. Many learns that it's tashmish of mukta that's prohibited. Doesn't mean that I have to literally move this thing. The case later on, where it does mean literally you'll have to move it, we'll see why over there it's clearly different. But the Chazanish brings many riyas that there's no iser of hano on mukta. That's a misreading of the sugya over here. But it's the shimush of the thing that seems to be the problem. Chazal aser tashmish of mukta. Why would there be any iser in throwing out or burning mukta? That's not the point. It's not the burning that's the problem, as Moshe Baruch points out.
The
use, the fact that I need to use it to whatever for my purposes. That use, Mamela, brings the tiltal. The whole gzeira of mukta, according to Rambam, is essentially a gzeira of tiltal, which is a gzeira of hotzah. It's another raya, but that's the only thing on our mind. Chickens. Because those remain the foodstuff. They're still edible. They're good for the cat. We'll see later on. V'hadarav labdik feirush gitma. The truth is that this case of Gar'inin, which we're quoting from Rav, wasn't exactly said by him. It's just that it was taken as if he said it because of a particular situation, and whenever the Gemara says this, lav b'ferush yidmar, it means that therefore you can't really rely on it. There may be another explanation. The case, actually, where we jump to the conclusion that Rav would have said the same thing b'gar'inim, came from an event in which Rav was eating tamarim. V'shani kashyata labuchya. He threw the pits of the tamarim into the stovetop as a fuel. So Reb Chiya said to him, that's an interesting thing you're doing, but bar pachti, kinegdo biyom tov asur. I mean, to do that on Yom Tov would be asur, because, you're machmar according to Reb Yehuda.
Meaning now, this wasn't Yom Tov.
No, this he was doing b'chol, but he just made a comment, okay. And Rav accepted the comment, and he didn't argue. So it appears that we're correct in jumping a conclusion that that's what he held. If you ask me in point of fact, kibla mine or lo kibla mine, can you prove whether he was makabel that psak from Rabbi Chiya or not? Well, there was a case, tashma dechiyata Rav lebavel. We know Rav, after moving to Bavel to become Rosh Yeshiva, the ochel tamri, v'sharik ashayta lechiyuta. What he did over there was he ate the tamarim, and he threw the pits into the animal feed. Now, I would assume that the case over there was, my love, this is the only loose piece in this, because I don't have all of the data. There are two different types of tamarim, which we've all met. Some tamarim, high-quality tamarim, which we're calling over here the tamarim parsiata, which are really nice, juicy tamarim. What you do over there is when you take the meat of the tamar off, it strips the gar'in completely. And there's a little membrane that comes off with it, and you're left with a clean, dry gar'in. The poor quality dates, when you take off the meat, you can still suck on the gar'in for a long time because it's never really cleaned off. It doesn't peel cleanly. That's called the armiyata. Here we go. These are nice armiyata garinims. Not parsaita. Oh, now I'm going to get all sticky. You do it. And when you pull off the meat, you're left with a sticky pit that you could still have ochlin on. And therefore, that would still be food. Now the shiloh over here is what exactly he did. So, assuming that it was good quality dates, then that means that he held it was okay to use this to be mishamish with mukta, even though it was no longer food, and apparently he was not makabel Rebbe Chiya's psak, to which the Gemara says not necessarily. Maybe it was ba'ar miyata. It was poor quality dates, and the reason that he felt he could still utilize the garinim was because they're still foodstuffs, and therefore they're not mukta. Hoyil v'chazi agav imayu. They're still usable for their mother, so to speak. You still have some of that the mother load on them. According to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds mesikim bekelim veim mesikim b'shivrei kelim, I don't understand how that works. Because you had the whole case in the Mishnah where the original explanation that we had is since you have to be madlik berov hayotze, so you're going to turn it into shivrei kelim. I mean, so by definition, once you've burned a kli, I mean, at one point, it becomes shivrei kelim, right? So, okay, I understand. I didn't start a fire with shivrei kelim. That itself is not a problem. But once you get a fire going, I mean, don't you now? And here is where we introduce the idea of mahapech bisura, not earlier. So kika mahapech bisura kamahapech. When you have to stoke the flames, aren't you going to be now moving mukta? Thank you. A new world has come. It's not the air conditioner that proves that it's summer. It's the bottle of water instead of the tea. And we thank you for making the entire springtime full of birds singing and flowers blossoming. Everything has changed. Amen. So earlier in the Mishnah, we didn't need to deal with the issue. At least this is the correct way to explain it, the way most Mepharshim understand it. There was no issue of mahapir there. It wasn't because we were afraid you were going to have to poke the ptila or the other cases of the gari. But here, where you're telling me, well, as long as you start with kalim, it's okay. I mean, that's all very nice for a start, but the truth is I do have to keep the fire going. And when I keep the fire going, I stoke it. And if I stoke it, then I'm going to be using shivrei kalim at that point, so why wouldn't it be usher according to Yehuda anyway? Answers the Gemara, you're actually right, but the only case where Rabbi Yehuda would say mesikim bekelim was where there wouldn't be a problem of stoking. And where would that be? The Yavad Kid Rav Matna. You use Rav Matna's approach. Rav Matna says, quoting Rab, that in a case where you have etzim shenashru min hadekel letanur biyom tov, this guy is clearly living a life of Riley. I mean, you know, this is Gan Eden. What do I got to bother putting fuel on my stove? The trees drop their branches into the oven, and all I have to do is, well, hopefully one day just think about it, you know, and it'll light. But when things are bad, you got to actually light them on yom tov. So, but here, of course, you got a problem. According to Rav Yehuda, even Gan Eden's not good enough. Because the eitzim that fall into the tanur are now going to be basically nola. Because before they were growing, they weren't firewood, they were a tree. And now they're firewood. And so, for all that the malachim got your tanur ready to burn, you can't use it. So what do you do?
Well, you have to open under the tree.
Well, of course. Of course. Their tanurim, remember, used to open from the top. The norm would be that you have an open tanur under a tree.
And to put a funnel there as well, so like the wood.
You don't want to make it harder for the malachim. Okay. This reminds me of that guy in Kenya who just sat down on his table and had his fruits hanging above his head. Just pick and eat. That's Gan Eden. He says, this is Gan Eden. You're just picking me. And then you don't clean anything up. You just throw it onto the ground, and out come little scurrying monkeys and things. They can eat it. There's nothing left. And it's wonderful. So anyway, according to Rabbi Yehuda, what would you do? Says Rav Matna Marav, the simple answer. If you have rove eitzim, then basically you're mevatel the eitzim that are mukta in the rove eitzim that are kosher, because they were prepared from before, and then you don't have a problem. So the same thing would be true. But you know what happens is you take your kalim, you've got your kalim, your marba real firewood on the kalim. That way, even when you poke, you go according to the rove, and the iser of mukta becomes batel now in the eitzim that are okay. And so that would have to be the only case, according to Rav Yehuda, that you would be able to do this. Otherwise, you'd be involved in poking muksa later. Well, I already caught it, so you don't have to be much real. The truth is that that's not so poshut, because in a case, I mean, lemaise, it's clear from other cases, it's only because the eights were already there, and now you can't move them out, so the only eights you have is to be marba, so we allowed you to be marba. We wouldn't have allowed you to be marba lechatchila, even though it's not talking about achila over here. The reason that by it's okay in cases where you're lighting bekelim is because at the time that you were marba, there was no issur. I'm marba eitzim and a half kelim. I'm allowed to light the kelim. Once I marba those eitzim, even though the kelim later turn into shivrei kelim, after they're burning, at the time that I did the rebuy, I wasn't being mevatel anything on purpose. So if there's a problem of being mevatel here, lechatchila, it wouldn't apply to this case.
Could it be that after you lit it, you started it, you didn't take the din of a shivrei kelim, there's always a tree that just happens to be in
Halakim,
it's not
really
Shibrei
Kelim, it's already on fire. Yeah, that's what Shibrei Kelim means. It's no longer, what's here is no longer usable as a Kli. Now, going back to the Mishnah, we have yet another approach. So the two approaches that we had was, does Kippul Mevatel Shem Beged, and thereby lead us into the problem of Shibrei Kelim. That was the first approach. The second approach was, two different issues. Kippul Mevatel, the din of Beged, that part is still the same. The second part was unrelated to that question, and that had to do with the singeing. Do you need to have a singed Beged before Shabbos? Lo hivava. By the way, it's just as an aside, it's just a interesting, the word hivava has become, in modern Hebrew, blinking. Right? Lahavhe means turn on your blinker in your car. The reason that hivhuv is now used for blinkers is because the idea of lo hivhava, instead of using a simple word for singeing, which exists, chiruch is singeing. And that's essentially what it's referring to over here, is because particularly if we want to talk about a case in which I wasn't memayatically, if I don't have to be madlik and ruh hayotze, then the way in which I singe is through touching lightly. As you know, you bring the fire close to it, take it away, fire close, take it away. You don't want it to actually burn. So every heave hoof is essentially blinking. Attack, in, out, in, out, in, out. So we used, in conjunction with light, which is the fire here, heave hoof, to have a blinking light. It's a very cute Ben Yehuda extension of the idea in the Mishnah. That makes a great deal of sense. Anyway. It's just a lashon aside. Rega shelivrit. We have now a third possibility. And the third possibility is that indeed the approach of Rava about the question of hadlaka is correct. We're only talking about the singeing and whether that's important. The first assumption that we made, according to Rav Nuna, was incorrect. The machlokas is not whether kippul is mevatel the shame of beged, the machlokas is whether a ptilat ha-beged is a beged. And what is a ptilat ha-beged? Ah, says Rav Nuna. We are not talking about exactly shalash al-shalash, nor are we talking about slightly larger than shalash. We're actually talking about less over here than the shear of shalosha. Once it would be shalosha, tvachim. Then, of course, it would be chashuv, we said, for aniyim and for ashirim, and there'd be no problem. Here we're talking about, it's less than shlosha al shlosha, and we're dealing with kulei matlaniot. Kulei matlaniot, not to be confused with the idea of kulei in terms of halakha, less stringent, lenient. Kulei, we mean when something is kal be'enecha, it's unimportant to you. We have over here, basically, pieces of cloth, which you have already determined to use in particular ways. So you've set aside a piece of cloth, let's say, as a drain stopper. Now, as a drain stopper, it's not really a valuable baguette the way a normal thing would be, even if you're non-shalosh, or more than shalosh. Or you set it aside next to the oven to use when you need to grab a pot. I mean, it's obviously a temporary kind of thing. It isn't sewn or anything. It's a piece of cloth that you use to grab a hot pot with or something, or a hot spoon with. Small. Use it for a hot spoon.
Shmatas,
exactly. But shmatas that have a particular low-level use that I'm not, you know, I don't intend necessarily to keep them around. And the machlokas over here of whether they're makabel tuma is completely unassociated with the questions of kippul or of hivuv or any other machlokas about shibrei kelim. This happens to be a well-known machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, and that's why Rabbi Nuna says, I mean, it makes a great deal of sense to use my approach. We know that this machlokas exists. What is the status of matlaniyot, which have been set aside for a less than normative use of a beged? And that's the Mishnah as follows. And that's probably the same issue that is going on over here, says Rav Nuna, is the issue that was going on in the Mishnah in Keli. It's not. Pachot mishlosha or shlosha. If you have a piece of beged that is less than 3x3 tvachim, and therefore doesn't have the full chumrah, bein lani and bein lashirim of beganim, so you decided you're going to use this to stuff the drain in your bathtub. Well, you're going to use it to grab a hot pot. Or you need to have a rag that's available after grinding to be able to get out the grain residue, because otherwise your grinder goes smooth. So bein min hamuchan, bein sheinu min hamuchan. Whether this is now muhan or not, which doesn't make any sense. What do you mean? You just said you determined to use it for that. And the Gemara will talk about what we mean by that wording. Bein mina muhan, bein shena muhan. Says Rabbi Eliezer, it's tamei. Now, doesn't that sound suspiciously like our Mishnah Pilat HaBeged, Rabbi Eliezer Omer tamei? I'm telling you, don't. It's probably the same idea. Rabbi Yoshua doesn't appear in our Mishnah, but Rabbi Akiva does, and we'll see Rabbi Akiva actually appears in a minute. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, bein min ha-mukhan or bein shalom min ha-mukhan, tahor. It doesn't matter whether it was mukhan or not. Again, we don't know what those words mean. But he seems to be saying the complete opposite of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says no matter what the circumstances, it's always tamei. Rabbi Yeshua says no matter what the circumstances, it's always tahor. And Rabbi Akiva comes across as being in the middle. He says, well, it depends. Mina mukhan tamei, mishalom mina mukhan tahor, and clearly the machlokes in our Mishnah would then be Rabbi Eliezer saying it's tamei under all circumstances, and Rabbi Akiva, assuming that we're talking about the case where it was a shalom mina mukhan, he would be saying that pilat habeged that you're saying is tamei. I say, as I did in Kalin, that it's tahor, and there you go, simple explanation. Why does it say shekipla? Because we were about to talk about hivava. So I mean, we have to say, you only twisted it to make a ptila, but you didn't, lo yivava, you didn't singe it. But the part about kipla had nothing to do with the tumah entirely. And we had jumped to conclusion. The question was whether the kipul, because I mean, why else did I mention kipul? Must be because the kipul is the issue. No, says Rabban, the kipul is not the issue. The kipul was only said to introduce the question of whether it was singed or not. The issue was Mukhan or Eno Mukhan by Kulei Matlonius. Now we have to understand what indeed is Mukhan or Eno Mukhan. Says now Ula, or some say it was Rabba Bar Bachanam Rabbi Yochanan, let me explain to you the use of the wording of your Mukhan or Eno Mukhan. Besides the question of your determination of how to use this thing, you took a rag and you stuffed it into your bath. Okay, all very nice. What did you do when you let the water out of your bath? Because very often these things are one-time use things. Shmatas that are one-time shmatas. If you don't intend now to view this as a bag that is permanently in place, I mean, so then basically you're now being mevatelet. For all intents and purposes, it's thrown out. It's not being used as a pekah. Now the truth is that there may be a number of different things. We can really think of four different levels of how to look at this. You could throw it into the garbage on one extreme, which means that you're mabato, you're matshavana. You could put it into your box of saved shvatas, which is the other extreme, which means you intend to keep it and reuse it. But, I mean, there's also different things you could do. In order not to make that decision, there's always a simple solution. You open up your kitchen cabinet and you stuff it in the little thing behind the door, right? That's what you do with everything that you haven't yet quite made up your mind what you're going to do with. So that's called achore hadel.
Okay. And a room like that.
A house like that. Okay, now that's close. That's close to putting it in the garbage. That's one step away. Then you've got something that's closer to the kupsa, which is you put it on a hook. And now it's nearby, you might actually reuse it. You haven't started the process of making the determination that you're going to be misgaber and throw it out when your wife finally gets on your case. Okay, so you basically have three dargas over here. Four dargas over here. So therefore, says Rabbi Yochanan, as quoted here, that hakol modim, everybody agrees if you threw it into the garbage. I mean, then nobody would have held that it's tummy. Then divrei hakol tahor. Everybody, even Rabbi Eliezer would hold it's tahor. On the other hand, hinicho b'kufsa, if you went to the other extreme, you put it into your box of favorite shmatas, then everybody is modded it's tummy. Even Rabbi Yeshua is modded it's tummy. Lo nechleku el shetala o b'magod, the only question is that middle state where you put it on the hook or you put it behind the door. There, Rabbi Eliezer holds, well, you couldn't get yourself to throw it away, could you? So, midalozar koba ashva, clearly it's still daita iluye. You haven't been able to let go, and therefore it's called. It's still a beggar. So why then? My korele shalom minu mukhan. I mean, isn't the whole point that therefore it is minu mukhan? No, he's saying even though it's shalom minu mukhan, in terms of the case that I would have clearly accepted, that everybody would have agreed to a kufsa. In other words, shalom minu mukhan relative to a kufsa, shalom minu mukhan. Okay, you, Rabbi Yoshua, you hold the only case of mukhan is the kufsa. I'm telling you, I disagree with you. And even in your shalom and amukhan, I call it mukhan. Therefore, I say to you, Rabbi Yoshua, even though it's shalom and amukhan, in your opinion, it's still tameh, because I really do hold it's been amukhan. Rabbi Yoshua, on the other hand, says, well, look, I mean, you took the first step towards throwing it out, didn't you? I mean, you just couldn't get yourself to go all the way yet. But if you really intended to keep it, you would have put it in your shmata bag. So, midaloi nicho bekufsa. Therefore, I see that basically, he's more pessimistic, but basically, you've really been mevatel. But, betule batlet. Now, why do I call that muhan? Because I'm talking to you. In terms of ashpa, this is muhan, right? So I'm saying, even though it hasn't gone all the way and not thrown into the ashpa, I want you to know that I say even a level of achana like that is basically batal mevatel is das and it's shalom and amukhan. Rabbi Akiva says, well, you know, if you put it on the hook and you didn't even put it behind the cabinet door, that's more likely it's like Rabbi Eliezer and your das is still on it. If you already took that fatal step of putting it in the place behind your cabinet, then if it's v'nicho achorei hadelet, there I agree with Rabbi Yoshua, and it's tahor.
It's like sweeping it under the rug, so to speak.
What's that?
It's more like sweeping it under the rug.
And in the end, by the way, Rabbi Akiva agreed with Rabbi Yoshua entirely, by the way. I mean, because why do I say that? Omar Rebbe, I'll tell you why he said it. Take a look at the Lashon in the Mishnah. P'tilat ha-beged. I mean, what's this p'tilat ha-beged? Why don't you say, my Ari Datani p'tilat ha-beged? You should have said Ptilat Shel Beged. You tell me Ptilat Ha Beged. You're saying, even though a dying Beged who, so it's still a Beged. I'm still looking at it as if it's Mukhan, so to speak, on the level of Rabbi Yeshua. Nonetheless, I agree, Rabbi Akiva, that it's Tahor. And that explains the Mishnah very simply. We're not talking about the Kippur is not the issue. That's only the issue in terms of Shabbos. In terms of Tyre, we're talking about that middle stage between Shalosh al-Shalosh and Shalosh al-Shalosh, where you set it aside for Kool-Aid, meaning for cheap kind of usages in your eyes, and therefore the Shilas at this point, whether you were Mevatel it or not.
Well, why don't we call it a Kli? Why is it a Kli?
Kli?
Why isn't the...
A Beged is a Kli.
It's used for a pot holder. Why isn't the Beged a
Kli? Kalim that are made out of material are called Begodim.
Even though it's...
Yeah. A Beged essentially is just a format of a Kli. We'll call every Beged a Kli. It's a Kli for wearing. In other words, you would never use one of those black hats. You wouldn't call it a baguette. It's basically a kli that you put on your head. But by extension, we call it a baguette.
A laundry bag, therefore?
What?
A laundry bag?
It's a baguette.
It's a baguette.
Sure.
So how do we harvest those wheat initially? Different options here, or we go by the last?
Different week? Options.
So, just a high commission.
Lo yikov adam shifoferet shel beitza. Now that we finally got our lamp going, and we've got it filled with fuel, we've got a problem. And our problem is extra fuel tanks. What do you do if you want your lamp to burn a long time, and it simply doesn't contain enough fuel? There's a very simple solution. All you got to do is you take an eggshell that you've hollowed out and you put it on top, right on top of the lamp, with a little hole in it so that it drips into the lamp itself. But now you've got a spare fuel tank.
So they got the idea for the space shuttle, I guess. Right?
They actually have an eggshell construction to save weight. By the way, the Eliyahu Rabba says the correct way to read this, believe it or not, is not beitza, but bitza. And shvoferet shel bitza means a kone. Shvoferet meaning a hollow piece of wood that grows in the swamp wood, which you can use then.
Like a reed?
Yeah, like a reed, exactly. So it's a tube that you take from a bitza. I mean, why would people hollow out an egg? You know, of course people do this. It's actually fun. No, that's why. It's for Easter is actually the reason. But the leftovers, wouldn't you know it, the Jews would take all of those carefully hollowed out Easter eggs. It's another thing, the rotten Jews. And use it for the Shabbos candles. Of the Bitzah or the Beitzah?
The nervous with what, egg or a reed?
But how?
It doesn't look like an egg to me.
Whole round
cylindrical
container. The same idea. Yeah. Okay. And the reason would be, you want it to drip. And the truth is, even if you wasn't really an egg, but it was made out of cheres, a filishal cheres, it's the same idea. But what's the idea? The idea is that an extra fuel tank might be attractive in terms of food.
What?
Food.
Food.
Yeah. I mean you ran out of your olive oil on the table, and there is a nice attractive eggshell filled with olive oil.
And never miss a dry.
Well, why not? Yeah, they'll never miss it, exactly. Yeah, why not pour a little bit on your salad and then put it back?
It's
it's dripping anyway, right? And of course if you would do that, you get to a problem of mechabet. Because it doesn't matter whether you're mechabeh by removing oxygen from the lamp or mechabeh by removing the fuel from the lamp. It's still mechabeh. And therefore, we answer it as a gzeirah. But Rabbi Yehuda Matir, Rabbi Yehuda says, it's okay. Aval im chibra yotzer mitchila mutar. It doesn't mean it's also to have a spare fuel tank made originally on your Shabbos candle. then it's part of the lamp, and you're sort of, you know, out of sight, out of mind. But that's my lamp. Now, there's also another trick that you can do to have a spare fuel tank, and that is you can simply use a cup, fill it with oil, and attach a wick from the cup to your lamp, and that way the lamp ultimately draws from the cup through capillary action. You'll end up using that oil as well. Over there, you got the same problem. It's in a separate cup, so you'll pour some of it out. So lo yimale adam ki'ara shel shemen. Don't take a bowl of oil. It's nene b'tzada ner. Place it next to the ner. V'yiten rosh ha'p'tila b'tocham. Put the other end of the wick in it to draw. B'shvil sh'tei sho'avet. To draw out of it. Rabbi Yehuda matir. And Rabbi Yehuda here too says it's mutar. Which means that basically we have three cases in the Mishnah. We have the two primary cases of extra fuel tanks through dripping. And extra fuel tanks through drawing with the p'tila. And we also have a subcategory, which is the difference between an eggshell and cheres. Now, cheres is disgusting if it's been used once. And that introduces a new idea. So let's take a look why we need all these three cases. The Ashwinu Shvofer Shel Beit Sa'ah would have said, okay, the Rabbanan say it's an eggshell, nice, clean, pretty eggshell with a little coating of plastic inside. Those things are designed for perfect use of keeping your extra oil clean enough to put into your shemen, into your salad. So over there, the Rabbanan answered that given to Loma Isa, there's nothing disgusting about that. Asilis tapukimina, you may well use it. But cheres, once you burn a ner shel cheres, it's all sooty and disgusting. And you wouldn't want to take oil out of a lamp, really, to use in your salad. So over there, it's ma'ise. Maybe they would be moda to Rabbi Yehuda. There's no reason to make a gzeira. On the other hand, iyash minat shel cheres, if you would have told me the case of cheres, was perhaps that's the only reason that Rabbi Yehuda was matir. So v'hakam Rabbi Yehuda that it's mutar. Mishum, I mean, you have the case here of the cheres, but if it was a nice clean eggshell, even Rabbi Yehuda perhaps would be moda that you'd have to worry. Maybe you take some for your salad, so maybe be moda to the Rabbanan. Now, let's say I knew both of these cases, the eggshell case and the cheres case. I would have said, okay, Rabbi Yehuda is ready to say in that case that you look at it. And you say to yourself, oh, I can't touch that. I can't use that on Shabbos. That's all part of the lamp. Because, I mean, it's right there on top of the lamp, the eggshell. It's not sitting at the side. But a ka'ara. I mean, you take a look at the ka'ara. The ka'ara's got a little seal in it. I mean, big deal. It's basically a nice separate cup of oil. Why can't I use that? Oh, but there's mipsika. It's not attached to the lamp. Not on the lamp. So ema moda to the Rabbanan, maybe he would, in that case, would be moda to the Rabbanan that there's a serious chashash of taking that oil and being mechabeh. Therefore, comes along the Mishnah to tell me that no, even over there, Rabbi Yehuda argues. Say, there ema moda to Rabbi Yehuda, On the other hand, if we would have had only this case, of course I would have said, well, actually the Rabbanan in this case argued. But in the other two cases where it's attached to the Ner, it's meaning not attached, but it's on the Ner itself, therefore we need the cases both for Rabbi Yehuda and for the Rabbanan.
This is the question. This reminds me of Moshe Zatzal's Kiddush that turning off the gas and lamp that might not be his unpublished Kiddush that turning off the gas and lamp that is not necessarily a keyboard. You know, listen to my Shabbos here, kind of.
Yes, it's interesting that there are some.
Yeah, Kiddush Gadol, he doesn't say what it is, and by keyboard.
Are some who hold this the same thing by the balloons of gas. Yeah, that were in common use here. Things have gotten a little bit more modern, but still many places they use balloons, where when you turn off the balloon, the gas still continues to flow a little bit. In other words, you have a long pipe going to your balloon, it won't turn off instantly. So in such a case where it's not being shoev, remember, the problem here is that it says over here, the only time that we ask for this is if you have an egg that was set as an extra fuel tank, right? How about if your house is on fire and you want to take out some things from the house that shouldn't burn? Is that mechabet? Because you're removing the fuel from the flames. It certainly is not mechabet. We'll see later on that you're allowed to do that. We'll talk about precisely in terms of the chashash and the character for surrounding. We have different questions about how much you can take out and so on. There's certainly no problem with mechabet. Why is this considered to be mechabet? Only because it's bishvil shatei. When it says bishvil shatei midat tefes, it's not giving me the explanation of why you did it. It's telling me that it was done for that purpose. So the setting it aside for that purpose makes it into the lamp. Which is a very surprising thing. In other words, not only is your machshava the definer of the malacha, but it's your machshava that defines the nature of this flame. That's a pretty amazing thing. In other words, what is considered to be the lamp? Whatever I decided would be considered to be the lamp. Fact is, it's going to burn. Whether you put it there, maybe you just put it there because it's really for your salad, and it has a leak in it. You figured, the heck, I don't want it leaking all over the table. Let me put it on the lamp. So you leave it on the lamp so that it shouldn't leak on your table. In that case, it would not be usher to take from it on Shabbos. That's exactly the same case. It's interesting, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman points this out in the Kovet Shiur. That your machshava, this is lapella, your machshava creates the circumstances of how we view the reality of the burning flame, right? What's the lamp? No, it says it has to be b'shvil shtei minat tefet. If it's not b'shvil shtei minat tefet, it's not considered to be kibui. Over here too, you're saying, but this fire would ultimately consume these clothes. How can you take them outdoors? It wasn't set up for that. So that's not called mechabet. So therefore, there's a question that some raise about balloons. If the normal intent is that this was the way it was done once upon a time, you know, the little doodads next to the oven, those actually used to be used. Now they're there only as a safety device. If you can't get to the oven, you close them. But they actually used to be used. Nobody would leave their gas on. So the norm was to close the gas. My God, if you left the house and left the gas on, the old lady would kill you in Meir Sharim. Das vermag dem Gott. So therefore, it's not standard to let that all of the gas in the balloon is meant to be burnt in the fire of Mr. Mishugan. I mean, well, we can afford a fire like that. Besides, maybe some of the gas will leak out and it could cost us another 5 grush. Those were the days when 5 grush meant something. So Mamela, it's not the lamp. That's the question in the Acharon. No one has the guts to actually be matter turning off the gas under these circumstances on Shabbos, although there are people who talk about it under the table. On Shabbos, it would be the same thing, Lechora. Some would talk about it on Shabbos. Reb Zalman is Reb Zalman Nechemiah Goldberg has a little tshuva on it. Okay, but certainly on Yontif, you can easily see the, you know, of course that's the basis of this whole new, you know, the little Mechon Tzomet. They have this little, we're there, it's indeed set up, L'chadchila, to turn off.
Why would it be in
a little spring?
Shabbos would be like the same way you're moving the clothes away from a fire.
Yeah.
You didn't want that to be.
It was never meant to burn. That wasn't part of my lamp. So I want to take away now the gas. I want to remove the gas balloon, let's say, for some other purpose, to strangle my neighbor. So I want to plug it into his house instead of having it plugged into my stove. So why should I not be allowed to strangle my neighbor with the gas?
Well, strangle if you don't know his gas. It's not a fixed.
Okay, I mean, it's kind of. Aaron raised the issue, so I'm just talking it out. But it's not Lamaisa, since no one will do it. So. Okay.
I was told that you probably would. There was. Okay, I said enough.
Okay.
I don't think more dangerous thing I heard. I heard it said about the gas stove.
You heard what?
Moshe has a word. It says he said that. Yes, Kiddush Gadol.
Yes. But what's the second word you said? I heard it said.
Moshe says he has a Kiddush Gadol, which he doesn't want to say for favors.
Yeah.
Those are the words he has in the shoot. And someone told me that, that he's referring to a regular gasol, not from the old fashioned.
Yeah, but it'll be the same idea. It'll be the same idea if it would be the derech to close an oven. It doesn't have to necessarily be in a balloon. It could be in a central storage place. V'im chibra yotzer mitchila mutar. Tana. The Brisa says, im chibra besidu b'chasit mutar. As long as you glued it yourself, you glued it onto the nair, it's also good. What? But the Mishnah says the yotzer. I mean, isn't that mean, doesn't mean it has to be manufactured that way. Not just glued on an extra fuel tank. No, that just means ke'en yotzer. In other words, if you make it a good chibur of chasid, sin, and so on, it doesn't have to manufacture that, but you manufacture it for that purpose, it's perfectly okay. Tana, Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Pa'am Achat, probably the correct verse here is Shavatnu. Pa'am Achat Shavatnu Ba'aliyat Beit Nitzah B'Lud. We once spent Shabbos in Beit Nitzah's famous Aliyah in Lud. And you know what they did? I can tell you, my friends, personally, I actually did this. I took an eggshell and I made a hole in it. And I put it on the fire myself. Okay, Rabbi Tarfon was there. The Zakanim were there. You think they wouldn't have said something if I did something wrong? Nobody said a word. So obviously, is that a problem? Lo and Rulon and Damar, I'm telling you, this was acceptable across the board. Amrulo Misham Raya. Well, you're going to bring us a Raya from there. Shine Beit Nitzah Bizrizine. I mean, nobody would have said a word to you over there because there was no Chashash over there. But the question is whether, under normal circumstances, this indeed would be a Chashash. Now, this opens up a little bit of a Pandora's box of Gezerah Derabanan. I mean, was there such a Gezerah, or was there not such a Gezerah? If there's such a Gezerah, we're not going to say that Kol HaBeitzim Asurim, the Beitzim Shel Beit Nitzah Mutarim. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's the famous famous Gemara in Pesachim about whether a bakery that has a stamper to make nice little cakes would be mutter to do it because it's not going to take more time to bake their matzah in a nice shape. So that's it. Kol HaTzarika Nasurim, Adapka HaTzarika, that this guy are mutter. So it doesn't make sense to say this reason. If, on the other hand, no such gezera exists, so do we expect there to be an assumption of a gezera? Well, gee, something bad might come of this, and therefore it's a given that it's usur. Now, the truth is that we do have certain types of activities which lend themselves so much to leading to Isser that without a particular gezerah across the board of Assering this, we Asser it under the general rubric of don't do something that leads to Isser. But in those circumstances, it really depends on the situation. If you are in a situation in which this thing in fact doesn't lead to Isser, and we will see we're coming to a very famous occurrence of exactly this rule, which is not well defined, I must tell you. And that is, are you allowed, let's say, to sweep the floor on Shabbos? What's the problem? The problem is that where you've got floors that are mostly dirt floors, sweeping the floor would be a serious problem. It would be mashwi agumas, binis adiraisa. Now, how about if you are a rich man in town and you have a tiled floor? So can you do your floor, but nobody else in town can do their floor? So there we come, in fact, into a general idea in which if the norm is to have a covered floor in this area, then you can do it. If the norm is not, you can. And that's it there too. Well, what do you mean norm? They go there according to the norm. So there are certain types of gzeirot in which we understand that the circumstances are definitive. Therefore, they're tiny to review to don't bring us a raya that it was allowed in Beit Nitzah. Even if this is Asr, it wasn't Nimnu the Gomru to Asr it. It's Asr because it leads to Isr and therefore was accepted as being Asr. But why would anybody have opened up their mouths there in Aliyat Beit Nitzah, which is a place in which everybody was careful? Now, there was a case of Ovin, there's a similar case in which Ovin Sipura'a Gorar Safsala Bi'ilita Deshisha Le'elam Rav Yitzchak Ben Elazar. Rav Yitzchak Ben Elazar was sitting there, and this gentleman Ovin from Tzipori, which is a place of Barnea's neighborhood, he dragged a safsal across the floor in a beautifully shyish floored aliyah, second story that had a floor of marble, which was obviously no problem of dragging and making any kind of furrow on the floor. And Rav Yitzchak ben Elazar stopped him because he says, you know what? If I shut up the way Rabbi Tarfon was quiet over there, which led Rabbi Yehuda to the assumption of, well, I suppose it's complete after, nobody would ever worry about such a thing. If I do the same thing here, saying to myself, well, I mean, after all, it's a marble floor, what possible harm could come of it? I'll tell you the possible harm that'll come of it, because nobody else in town has a marble floor. So they will figure, oh, well, look at this. The Gedalim were there, and they allowed you to drag it across the floor. He himself holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Apparently, there's also to drag across the floor. So if I'm going to be quiet here, next thing you know, everybody in town is going to be over on dragging things across a dirt floor, creating furrows and being Makala Shabbos. Therefore, I tell you to stop. Zere Elita, the Shishat, the Elita, the Alma. You can't do this, because in a normal floor, you don't have a tile in your head. Now, this here, as Tosfos brings, ultimately, we're going to see that Amemar was matir doing this in the town of Mechuza. But that's because the town of Mechuza was basically L.A., and over there, there's no chashash of Ashwiya Gumas, because everybody has marble floors. If you don't have marble floors, you have to leave the neighborhood. So in the neighborhood, there would be no chashash. It's one of those things. Reish Kanishta, the Batsra, the Reish Kanishta, Rashi says, his job is to get people into davening on time, you know? Basically. So he puts everybody in their seats and gets everybody in, and he gives out the seats to the kids, and so he's the Reish Kanishta. Anyway, he dragged a safsal in the Beit HaKnesset. Because that's part of his job. Le'elam Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba. So Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba said to him, hey, buddy, come on, according to whom are you dragging that? You're going according to Rabbi Shimon? I mean, Rabbi Shimon didn't say, just as a matter of course, don't even worry about it. Rabbi Shimon said, look, if you've got something heavy to drag, then it's inconvenient to lift it up. Okay, you can drag it if it's not going to be a psik resha to make a furrow on the ground. So that was something that's gadol or delo efshar. But the safsal, why don't you pick it up like a mensch and move it to the other side of the shul? Why do you got to drag it across the floor to be samech on Rabbi Shimon where it's not necessary to do so? Biktanim mi omar? Did he ever say you could just drag whatever you want? And actually, he did. And pligidi ula, the omar ula, machloket biktanim. Actually, Ula says, even Rabbi Yehuda was matir if it's something big. Rabbi Yehuda didn't expect you not to move things on Shabbos. He agrees that ultimately you don't have to worry about it. Well, we don't pass him like that either. Basid Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Gorer Adam Mitak Yisei V'Sapsal. Now, come on. I mean, you really got to keep beating on a dead horse. Mitak Yisei V'Sapsal. V'aron Sfarim, V'shulchan Machshev. I mean, why don't you just give me the list? What is this, the movers? Give me an example. Clearly you're giving me a range of small things and big things. Now why do you have to do that? To tell me that on either end, in other words, don't say the big thing Rabbi Yehuda is going to be made, I'm not made that. And don't say the little things Rabbi Shimon would say, well, you got to drag it, carry it. What's the difference? So isn't that the whole point? I mean, is this Gorer Adam Mitak Yisei V'Sapsal? Okay. So So Katani Gedolim, Katani Ketanim, to make it very clear that both of you are wrong. Kashila Tarvayu, both of you are wrong. Obviously Reb Yehuda does not agree if it's big. Obviously Reb Shimon does not say avoid it if it's small. It says both ends to address both shitas. Reb Shimon and Reb Yehuda. Well, Ula will have to explain this, Lashitato. Of course, Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba, who says Rabbi Shimon disagrees if it's small, Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba would be Matarza Taime. Ula Matarza Taime, he would say, well, when it says Mita, it's a Kisei-like Mita. I mean, otherwise it's together with Kisei. You know, one of the small Mitas. Yeah. And Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba, Matarza Taime, well, no, I mean, when it says a chair, it doesn't mean a small chair. You don't mean a chair like a bed. I mean a reverential chair. So that's the key, say, Dumya Lamita. Masiv Rabba. Rabba says, look, you have an equivalent case, basically, on people who are going around selling clothing. Now, there's different ways you can sell clothing. You can sell clothing by conveniently putting on all the clothes.
Sale.
Exactly. And you're carrying 15 hats on your head, you know. And you've got a client, you take the hats off, and you show them the various hats. You could also have 15 suits on your back. You know, you start with the 38 and get up to the 54. And it's really nice. And then the guy wants to try on a suit, you peel off the jacket, and you get four layers down, and you give him his size. Now we don't have to schlep anything around. It can get a little hot on hot days.
Much less overhead.
There's a lot of overhead.
Yeah, if that's on the hats part. Yeah. So it says over there, how about if the suits are shotness? Right, so now here you are wearing 15 shotness suits above your regular suit, which is not shotness. You would find you wouldn't wear shotness. So it says over there, and mochrik suit, mochrin kedarkan, there's no problem in wearing the shotness suits, obviously, for the goyim you're selling to. Ubilvat shelo yitkaven b'chama mipnei hachama, as long as you don't have kavana in wearing those big Panama hats to shade yourself from the sun, and b'geshamim, because of the cold, b'nei geshamim, hatsnu'im, people who are very makbid and don't want to even have anybody thinking maybe that they're mafshilin b'makel achareim, they carry around the shatner's suits on a stick behind their back. Now, v'hachad efshel amavet kitznuim. Okay, I mean, if you want to, you could always carry these suits on a stick. So, I mean, according to you, you claim that Rabbi Shimon is motive. You've got an option. Don't drag. Obviously, this is going to Rabbi Shimon, because otherwise, what does your kavanah have to do with it? As Rabbi Shimon is saying, since I wasn't mechaven to wear this kilayim and to be nene from this kilayim, whether derech levish or derech ha'alah, there's no problem in it. All I'm doing is trying on a suit while I'm wearing a red. Tosis points out, obviously, I mean, if it's a secretia, if you're not wearing another suit, in fact, if this is going to warm you, And it's comfortable, so then it's a secret. It's a machab. I mean, there's no way to do it. But you're basically boiling anyway. It's a hot day. You're trying on a suit for the winter. You're wearing your regular clothing, and you want to get it off you as quickly as possible. So then you can try on a shatnez suit too, because you're wearing your regular clothing. Now, certainly, I mean, there's a way in which you could carry the suit on a hanger. Suit isn't so heavy, is it? So this is like Tanim. Now here, Rabbi Shimon says, look, if it's more convenient, it's equivalent, it's more convenient to dragging the chair, drag the chair. Don't I have to lift the chair? It's the same thing, more convenient to wear the suit than to carry the suit on a hanger. So then wear the suit. So you see that Rabbi Shimon is matir, the enum is coming even lechatzila, which is to yufta of Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba. Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba made such a fuss about, well, he tells him, you had no right to drag the safsal, you should have lifted the safsal. That's wrong. Rabbi Shimon holds you could actually drag it, even lechatzila. And indeed, to yufta, we don't go along with his psak of needing to try to avoid dragging, according to Rabbi Shimon.
We should be here soon. Rabbi Shimon's comment by not just by Shabbat, but by Kol Kula.
Well, let's not jump to the Kotor for a conclusion.
Oh, yeah, but it's sad.
Yeah, because, I mean, over there, Lepisha is defined by intent. But,